we would be able to simulate a trillion years of vastly expansive post-human bliss in all possible ways. I'm talking about, you know, Shakespeare writing his best sonnet, falling in love, eating ice cream, but multiplied by 1,000 in all directions that we have no words for, simulated for a trillion years, but in actual Earth time, maybe it would only be 6 hours or something. But some little sugar cube of quantum compute where we could kind of experience that.
What happens after AGI? Hello and welcome to Tech First. My name is John Katsir. AGI, you probably know, is artificial general intelligence. It's when AI achieves human-level intelligence and very likely, quickly thereafter, superhuman abilities, maybe even ushering in the singularity. I was recently at the Beneficial AGI conference in Panama. One of the speakers was the founder of Emerge Artificial Intelligence Research. He's interviewed nearly 1,000 people, AI leaders, executives in Fortune 500 companies. His name is Dan Magella, and he has some very good insight into what AGI might look like, what it might do, or at least where the experts think it will land. Welcome, Dan.
Hey, John. Really glad to be here. Thanks so much.
Super happy to have you, and I'm going to share something to the screen because I want to share one of the things that you showed when you gave a presentation, and I want to kind of walk through that and what it looks like.
Yeah.
You talked about all the people you've interviewed about AI, and you've basically kind of put them in boxes, in a sense, you know, where their feelings about where they would land about what they should do, what we should do with AGI. Talk about that a little bit.
Sure. I'll just walk through sort of the matrix itself. And just for clarity's sake, I don't see this as some kind of permanent, cogent category that you pin on yourself and you identify with through the rest of your life. I see this as a guide for conversation, because I think that a lot of these sort of polar dynamics of, accelerationism versus kind of, you know, doomerism, it's becoming this bipolar thing that I think is actually not representative of the diversity of discourse and conjures an us versus them versus an open dialogue around why do you think that? Where would you like to go at more high level? So I don't want anybody to think that this is intended to be more concrete than it is. It's a tool for discourse. With that said, I'll just kind of go over it at a very high level here. Across the top, we have sort of, roughly speaking, where you hope we land. Species-wise, man-machine combination-wise, what is a positive future? I talk a lot about beneficial versus or preferable versus non-preferable futures. Different people have different takes here. In the preservation camp, roughly speaking, we have folks who really are of the belief that nothing that comes close to tippy-toeing beyond humanity should ever be created. This could be brain-computer interface. This could be strong AI. Let's just literally have hard rules away from that, just like human cloning and other kinds of international law of some kind. Let's just, bar that altogether. That's your preservation camp. On your progression camp, you have folks that really sort of are believe in kind of the inherent specialness of humanity, would be open to brain augmentation, cognitive enhancement, even strong AI, kind of mostly as a tool for humanity to explore the galaxy and to learn. But it's still very much human at the core. Our kind of identities, our kind of culture or values, you could argue whether those things exist or not, would sort of be at the root of it. And so this would be kind of progression. And then ascension is sort of the general position of, humanity has bubbled up from fish with legs and before that from eukaryotes and before that from, wiggling amino acids or something. We should really hope that future intelligence bubbles up further than us as well. Because you and I, John, we experience a lot more richness in life than the wiggling amino acid. And presumably there's as much upward richness as there is between those first two that I just articulated. So those are your three going sideways. That's your one, your two, your three. Different people sit in different places in terms of what they consider a positive future, whatever that be. But that's kind of it. On the left-hand side here, we've got sort of how we want to get there. And roughly speaking, A, so our top column is controlled. This would mean very tight national and international governance and regulation around this stuff. We find, John, a lot of the preservation camp naturally gets a little bit attracted towards control because it's really, really hard to prevent the brain computer interface and AI snowballs from rolling unless we've got a very strong control mechanism. So there you have kind of control. It doesn't mean authoritarianism. It can just mean really stringent national, international control. Of course, the risk, though, is authoritarianism. Collaborative would be a bit like we have today. We've got international agreements. We've got treaties between nations. We've got organizations and bodies like the United Nations. We've got the OECD and other policy bodies where we're trying to coordinate commerce and other things, at an international and national level to be kind of collaborative. And then C would be open. Let's get rid of any degree of regulation. Open source all the way. Developing and building tech, any kind of brain computer interface, any kind of AI in whatever direction, unhindered. Government is only going to be bad. They're only going to control things. Don't allow for any of it. So you can land anywhere from kind of A1 to C3, depending on what you consider to be a valuable destination. And my goal, John, has been not just to say, hey, where do you land, but also to say, and what are the factors about the world and your understanding of it that have led you to that belief? And I think if we open to that, we now know why somebody sits where they do, instead of just saying, you're stupid for liking open source, or you're stupid for not liking open source. We can actually unpack where they sit. So this is the high level. Let me know if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. And what I loved about this matrix that you've created is, as you said, it gives us a tool for discussing stuff rationally and then looking at things. Where do I kind of fit? Where do I feel like I fit? What do we think is most likely to happen? How do I steer the world in the direction I think it should be? It's really interesting. You know, you think sort of cyberpunk, William Gibson, maybe your C3, right? Your acceleration, your transhuman, your libertarian, let 1,000 flowers of AI bloom and see what happens, you know, wherever it goes, right? And then you think, oh, wow, but AGI could mean the annihilation of the human race as we know it, right? And boom, then you're an A1, authoritarian, conservative, clamp it all down. But if you think about it, is that even possible? I mean, AI is out of the bag. There's a lot of open source out there.
Yeah.
Where do you land?
Yeah, I tend to be in the B3 camp currently. And again, none of these are permanent labels, right? I'm not saying I'm in B3 for eternity. I'm just saying that happens to be where I gravitate. But I do think that it may make sense to kind of hang out, in kind of B2 land for a little while. I'm not an advocate for the notion that if we go pedal to the metal as fast as possible, we will automatically have what I refer to as a worthy successor. So everybody else, people have different definitions of what a worthy successor is. But I don't believe that a worthy successor will come automatically. I don't think we just take the first thing that smells like strong AI and just throw it on a bajillion GPUs. And all of a sudden, we're going to have something that flowers value into the galaxy, kind of like we flowered value up from those wiggling proteins. I don't think that that's automatically the case. So I think we'll require some coordination and forethought to avoid an arms race on reckless speed dynamic. But ultimately, that blooming of ascension would be what I would consider to be the great moral good. But I don't think it's as easy as, again, just jack up whatever smells like AGI.
You've interviewed so many people, AI leaders at the biggest companies in the world, the FANG companies, the Googles, Apples, Microsofts, OpenAIs of the world.
Goldman Sachs, you name it, for sure.
Where do they typically land? These are people working on AI and in positions of influence and authority.
So, yes, a couple little caveats here. So my day job, which is, 80 hours a week. So it's not a super relaxing. but my, emerge artificial intelligence research, really most of what we cover on a day-to-day are the practical real world places where AI is adding business value or changing workflows, boots on the ground within, the biggest banks in the world, the biggest drug development companies in the world, biggest physical and online retailers, sort of tracking that real-time pulse on the ground is where we spend most of time. So in full admission here, when we talked to the CIO of Goldman Sachs, we weren't spending an hour picking his brain on this. We're spending an hour picking his brain about where AI is fitting its way into banking. Also, my finding has been, John, generally speaking, most people, even who are very deep in the game, in the high-level enterprise, really are not sort of receptive to this idea of kind of post-human considerations and decisions needing to be made. They don't see the inevitability of what I happen to believe is sort of coming, whether they believe it or not. on, they would kind of be like, yeah, I don't, that stuff's kind of crazy. I don't really know, you know? And I think it's a combination of maybe they really do think it's sci-fi. In other words, hey, the world is kind of not changed that much since I've been alive. I don't foresee a change that radical. I'm not thinking about it. But I think also, John, there's a degree of staring into the void that is just not that digestible. I think that if you, you know, have children and a spouse or people you care about, considering sort of the attenuation of man and considering some of the grand conflict and transition that would arise from something beyond people bubbling up, I think is indigestible. I think what you want to do is you want to go to bed at night and say, you know what, that lake house that I bought, my kids are going to get to enjoy that 25 years from now. You know, they're going to bring their kids up there and, you know, life's going to, you know, things are going to kind of, maybe they'll have a better iPhone and a car that drives itself, but they're still going to enjoy that lake house. I talk to a lot of people, John, on the enterprise side who are PhD hardcore folks who've seen a lot of movement in AI who mostly believe in 20 years, their children will be taking their children to the lake house that they bought. And life's just going to kind of cruise like it is. So to be clear, most of the people in the enterprise, even those very close to AI, they don't mess around with these ideas. I think mostly because of how wildly uncouth and gargantuanly uncomfortable it is to sort of face the attenuation. So let me give you that caveat first. Second, though, I will tell you who does have a response, and then we can talk about whoever you'd like to talk about in that group. The people who do have a response are, generally speaking, folks who have at least some history of concern or consideration around artificial general intelligence. So up until recently, by the way, someone like a Yoshua Bengio was not in that camp. I interviewed Yoshua 8 or 9 long years ago and famously, you know, and filled out a response to one of our AI risk polls 8 or 9 years ago. Again, we were doing this stuff with 30, 40 PhDs nearly a decade ago. And he was basically of the belief, like, this isn't even a consideration. Like, AI risk is not real. You know, even 100-year stuff, you really need to not even be thinking about this. And now, of course, he's very much in that. So generally, I have to catch people after that realization happens for them to be put on the docket here. But if you'd like, I can list some names of people you might know and then just sort of like plop them down and give you it. Sort of maybe why they want to hang there if you'd like.
Go for it.
Great. So Yoshua Bengio himself, you know, among the, if not the most kind of credible academic voice in the machine learning, sort of deep learning space, if I'm not mistaken, sort of the most cited computer scientist now breathing oxygen, is pretty squarely in the B2 camp. So He does see his rich position. And by the way, we have a YouTube channel called The Trajectory. So people typed in my last name and it's a trajectory that find the interview with Yoshua. And he goes into much more depth than I'll give you today. But basically his position is, we can't automatically assume that the first thing that bubbles up from an arms race of AI speed is going to become some kind of grand blossoming of value. We really can't presume that. We need to have a lot of sympathy and empathy for humans and life that is alive today. You know, he naturally leans towards openness for all of technology, but he's bumped up to kind of coordination because he really does think that sort of open sourcing some of this stuff, because of how powerful it is, could be a very, very rough situation. And I think he does want to sort of maintain some degree of a human core of values and have maybe a much more gradual eventual ascension, which he's open to. He's open to an eventual ascension. We are part of nature in his perspective. But he's pretty squarely in B2 for that example. Another sort of prominent thinker in this space who's thought about this stuff for a very long time is a fellow by the name of Roman Yapolsky. You probably saw him at Gürtel's event. Roman's been thinking about this forever. Again, Roman's another one of these guys. I think my first interview with him was 11 years ago or something insane like that. But Roman is sort of in the very lip of kind of A1, like towards wow. Progression, but not quite there. He's mm-hmm. more or less of the belief that if we do cross that line to technology that is pretty significantly beyond humanity. So I think he's either right before the A1 crosses to A2, or he might be like a millimeter past A2. For him, sort of really stringent control to make sure that this stuff is a tool at most, is essentially necessary for humanity to not be destroyed. He happens to be in the camp, and I do not agree with him in this regard, although he's a good friend, that any kind of post-human value just doesn't matter. You know, he's got a bunch of children. For him, kind of like that bloodline continuing, that is the real continuation of value. And, you know, his own instantiation of consciousness is the real continuation of value. Something that would be to us as we are to earthworms, even if it was to experience things vastly beyond our experience that are extremely utilitarianly powerful and monumentally valuable, would not come, because it's not humans, it's not hominids, get it out of here. So that is his perspective. And he has certain conclusions he's come to kind of sit there. So that's just a couple people. But again, to be clear, most folks, they don't want to talk about this.
It's super interesting because I get where people are coming from if they want to stick themselves in A1, preservation, humanity, human values, control it. I just don't think there's any controlling it. I think that the genie is out of the jar, that the fire has been released, and there's just no hope for that. It's really interesting, actually, that you mentioned that many of the people who are working in AI are not even thinking at this level, not even thinking of where that might go. And it makes me think of atomic scientists working in maybe the 1920s, the 1930s, even the early 1940s, and just doing their work, discovering things, the nature of the cosmos, what is the atom, how does it fit together, all that stuff, and really not having that much awareness beyond a few that we know of, that this is an amazing destructive and creative force that they're ultimately unleashing. I wonder if they're in that space.
I think that's some of it. So Bengio went into great depth in the interview on the trajectory about his evolution of thinking. And he explained it as two things. On the one hand, he said, Daniel, the things we were creating, they were just so stupid. So in other words, like, he was so close to it, seeing all their limitations, he was like, this thing is never going to blast off and become something gigantic compared to this. So that was one element. The second element was, there was a wrestling match inside himself around, has my life's work actually been on something that's potentially going to bring about the end of humanity, and really resisting the direct confrontation of that fact. So I believe that most folks who, you know, to your point, maybe they're just plotting away. But I think plotting away makes sense in some regard, because what's behind door number one is really hard to swallow, right? Mm-hmm. It's a really tough pill to swallow. If you just look at squarely, if you look it dead in the eyes, it's really hard to go to bed at night and be like, you know what? My kids are going to be up at the lake house in 20 years and they'll be water skiing just like me. It's really effing hard to do that. And these are people, John, who got to go to sleep, and they got to kiss the damn kids on the forehead before they go. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think that actually that's the challenge here. I think staring into the void is a manful and challenging ordeal, and is really not something most people are going to do until they're faced much more squarely with these risks. And I don't think we have enough of an impact. I think ChatGPT was a bit of an impact, but I think we need a bigger wallop for people to honestly look at the future and think of it as anything other than, I'm going to die in a rocking chair, nice and relaxed, just like grandma, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's actually, yeah, that's a great segue, because we don't have to posit AGI and superhuman capabilities to assume that AI will have immense impact, both
monumental,
for good and for bad, on our world. If we just look at generative AI and kind of the destruction of truth, I mean, just how that might get applied in the coming election year in the U.S. and maybe 3 years from now and maybe 4 years from now, and almost impossible to say. We already know that people live in their reality bubbles. We already know that people decide what they want to believe largely based on what they want to be true.
Absolutely.
This is going to be a huge challenge, AGI or no AGI.
I'm totally with you. I mean, look, I've said it 1,000 times. I'll say it 1,001 times for you here. If we pause the technology, no more hardware developments, no more software developments, end of story. It's over. No more developments. If we pause it all right now, we haven't seen even 2% of what would the insurance industry look like if from the ground up, we built it with what we have today. And we haven't seen 2% of that. Now, enterprise change is a very slow grinding process. I'm deep in that game, brother. Ain't nobody I know who's talked to more of those people and understands the cultural challenges, the technical challenges of leveling up 150-year-old, you know, bank or insurance or drug development company with very cutting edge tech. I'm not saying it's an overnight thing. What I'm saying is the competitors that are to arise and the changes that are to shift are gigantic. Same thing with day-to-day human life. You talk about the conjuring of truth. Absolutely. But I think without really any more fundamental developments than we have now, the inevitable place that we're going, here's an analogy I'm going to give to you, John. I want to see if this lands for you. Your screen time, probably about 10 or 15 years ago, peaked at like, maybe it was, I don't know, for me, it's like 16 hours a day, right? And then on the weekend, sometimes even part of my relaxation time is going to be on screens too. And my shopping is going to be on screen when I was, people are on dating apps and there's all kinds of stuff, right? But maybe you've been peaking for a while. You know, you can't spend 24 hours a day because you got to sleep. So maybe 10 years ago, it hit 12 hours. And then after cell phones, it hit 13 and a half. Maybe that's about all you got. However, here's another chart. So that chart's already peaked. A chart that is on the way up for you, for me, for everybody listening right now is percent of screen time conjured to you by an algorithm. What does that mean? LinkedIn, Twitter, Netflix, YouTube. Percent of screen time conjured to you by an algorithm. Could even be Tinder. It doesn't matter. Right? That percentage is monstrous and is only getting higher and higher. Right? Now, soon, John, soon, it will be conjured to you entirely. Not just like right now, the AI of YouTube will bring me a video that's already been created. I call that analog media. Mm-hmm. Soon, when I immerse myself for entertainment, for relaxation, we got a lot of human needs. Some of them are a little bit uncouth, John. Maybe I won't talk about it. But if I want any of those human drives, I will have an entire haptic and VR experience conjured based on my past preferences, my biofeedback, et cetera. There is a singularity of the audience of one for the fulfillment of our drives that I do not think requires a single additional development. Maybe immersive VR, we don't have enough time with the Apple headset to figure out if we're there yet. Maybe with VR, we got some hardware issues with human eyeballs and with glass that we're still not there. But other than that, we got all the stuff in place to live mostly in fully immersed AI conjured experiences. I don't want to look out this window, John. You know what I want? I want this to be a medieval castle. And outside of this window, I want a purple sky. I want a dragonfly. It's getting dark out here at Boston. I want it to be bright because I'm awake. I got 3-4 hours more of work to do. I don't want reality, John. I want what's conjured to me based on my preferences. We don't really need fundamental changes to get there, brother. And so to your point, monstrously large developments in terms of replacing romantic relationships and all these other things with like maybe not even changing what we have.
Amazing. It's interesting because as you were starting to talk about that, I was going, okay, yeah, synthetic sort of conjured kind of artificial lenses in reality on your screen time. Yeah, I'm on YouTube. Okay, I get that. On Reddit, yeah, there's an algorithm. Twitter/X, Threads, all there. There's now Facebook, there's an algorithm, exactly. I was going, okay, I'm in Google Docs quite a bit because I'm writing or something like that. Well, you know, predictive text.
All day.
That's kind of what Google's thinking the whole time. What is he going to say next? What is he going to write next? What word should I put there next? Absolutely. All that stuff. And that's just going to get more and more and more.
Yes.
It's mind blowing. It really is. Okay. Let's say AGI happens. Let's say the singularity hits. Let's say you have a choice. You can stay, and you already said you're in B3, so you're pretty out there. You're pretty out there. Sure. You're not accelerationist. You're not C3, but you're pretty out there.
And I'm not trying to rush to B3 tomorrow. I'm not in that.
Yeah.
I do think we need a lot more work to be done. But yeah, to your point, that's where I sit. So you're saying AGI is here. Go ahead. Hit me with the option.
Do you upload yourself? do you drill into your skull and add some cores for memory and intelligence, processing speed? What decision do you make?
Yeah, look, I'll give you the full Monty here, John. So I think that a noble and beautiful vision would be this idea that we individual instantiations of human consciousness are so valuable and unique that we could kind of merge with and be part of this grander artificial intelligence and sort of live in this great ecosystem of godlike intelligences into the beyond. And that could be with invasive BMI, that could be with mind uploading, that could be whatever the case may be, right? I think that's a sparkling and lovely vision. I think that if you wake up in the morning and you have to go to bed at night, I think it's really good. If you have to face the changes ahead, I think what you want to believe in is like some secret sanctity and specialness about yourself. You have like a childlike belief that you're special enough to sort of be able to contribute meaningfully to a world of kind of planet-sized computes that are a billion times your superior in speed, creativity, qualia, anything imaginable, and many things beyond human imagination. I would love, John, to be part of the blossoming of Potentia into the universe. So Potentia, P-O-T-E-N-T-I-A. There's an article, just danfagella.com/Potentia, to kind of get into that concept. It's from Spinoza, sort of philosophical sort of idea. But I would love to be part of this grand blossoming of Potentia to the galaxy. Present. I'm not presently of the belief that it is likely that that will be realistic or warranted. We don't currently let, you know, goldfinches or roly-poly bugs, you know, set the policies for how we deal with criminal law or, you know, how we want to reroute our sewer systems. Like, those animals don't get a say there for very good reason, by the way, John, because it'd be really hard to run a society, you know? And so I'm not quite sure what value my intelligence would have. I think the best case is there is some degree of merger where we level up our minds. And I think that some degree of BMI is maybe, but not certainly, part of how we get to AGI is we get way closer to the metal, but in this case, it's closer to the wetware, right? Closer to the neurons. I think getting closer to the neurons is part of probably how we'll bubble up in intelligence. Potentially how we'll ensure that it's maybe in some degree conscious or sentient. But I think once it's there, John, I don't think we've got a lot of great ways to be relevant, to be honest with you. So what would I hope for? I hope to maybe be part of that leveling up. So maybe I get jacked in and my data, like everybody else's, gets fed in to the great system. And then I have an article called Hope. So danfagella.com/hope. So myname.com/hope, where I think the most that we could hope for, John, would be to have our individual instantiations of consciousness uploaded into maybe a sugar cube of compute. And inside of this sugar cube of compute, John, we would be able to simulate a trillion years of vastly expansive post-human bliss in all possible ways. I'm talking about, you know, Shakespeare writing his best sonnet, Musk taking a company public, falling in love, eating ice cream, but multiplied by 1,000 in all directions that we have no words for, simulated for a trillion years, but in actual Earth time, maybe it would only be 6 hours or something, but some little sugar cube of quantum compute where we could kind of experience that. And then get as much of that charity as I could get, John, until the great intelligence decides to do something actually productive with that compute. So my hope is, if we must attenuate, and I suspect we must, John, I suspect everything before us has, and I suspect we must as well, I would hope that our bowing out could be a delightful bowing out. I would love to tell you, I personally, John, will be of great dramatic influence and relevance in the world of godlike planet-sized compute. But I think that that is not right. And I think it is much more right to suspect that the best we could hope for is a bit of charity, to be granted a pinch of bliss before we got caught at it.
Super, super interesting. It's funny, as I was listening, I was trying to kind of characterize, you know, where you were on those various phases in my own words and where I kind of landed. You know, one of them, and I'm not saying you were saying this exactly, but one of them is kind of the Borg, you know, and it's this kind of accretive thing, and you're sort of part of it for a while. And another is your charity case living on the, while the massive intelligence lets you. And another is digital simulated heaven, right? Where I get to do everything, anything in a million years of sort of experienced time.
Yes.
6 milliseconds of compute time in whatever quantum supercomputer we're living in. And I guess the other one is sort of pass the torch. Hey, we're done. Here you go. There we go. And sayonara, going gently into the night, I suppose.
Yeah.
I'll tell you kind of where I would land. And
go ahead. Yeah, please, please.
Maybe
I love
I'm
it.
Just an idiot. And maybe I'm naive.
Well,
I don't really
you, John. I think compared to what's after us, hopefully we are idiots, but sometimes even compared to ourselves. But yeah, where do you land, brother? Where do you land?
Have you read the book Boat of a Million Years by the science fiction author Poole Anderson?
I have not. And here's a random fun fact about me, John. I have very limited exposure to fiction. My life is two things. It's history, a ton of Greek, Roman, and French Revolution. And it's talking to heads of AI and Fortune 500 companies, founders of unicorn AI startup. So my thing is like way in the future, deep in the past, combine those two. That's it. All my ideas mostly spring from that. But I do respect fiction. You'll have to get me up to speed on the plot here. I want to understand.
Poole Anderson, great science fiction author, wrote this book, Boat of a Million Years. And it's essentially about the end of aging. And there are some individuals, it's like one in a billion, that somehow have some mutation and they don't age and they have lived forever. And at some point they come out, there's like 6-10 of them, and it's discovered how this has happened and everybody can get treated to have the same thing. But then these people find that they're sort of these avatars. They're sort of these Cro-Magnon type people that aren't relevant in this world that's changing and doing so much. And they decide to take a spaceship to the center of the galaxy, to the center of the Milky Way, the Boat of a Million Years. Really interesting. And I kind of figure that in the scenarios you described, I would hope to do something like that and spend the time just exploring and enjoying. And so I don't know where I would land in your matrix. I think there's something super valuable about human perspective, but I also embrace the technology and maybe getting a little augmented and jacking in from time to time, but maintaining some level of personality, individuality matters. But these are fascinating things, and I look forward to seeing how they develop over the next 5, 10, 20, 30 years.
Yeah, we're going to find out. We're going to find out in some way, shape, or form, brother. We may only have 2 or 3, so fingers crossed, but glad we got to discuss it a bit today.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, John.